Blog Talk Radio.
The Ooze is brought to you by the following: cultofcthulhu.net, Awaken with the Cult of Cthulhu, creativeoddity studios.com, making art a dirty word since 1998, lulu.com/satanus, Purchase Publishings by Bender Satanus, artist, author, cult visionary. Find titles such as Cthulhu Cult, Libre AO, and the role-playing game Empire of Satanus. Lulu.com/creativeoddities. Find publishings written by Jason Terrell, artist, author, such as The Tattoo Apprentice, The Baphomet Codex, and The Devil's Due. FearTheBeast.com. Let the madness begin. Catch the Dollies, a Vigilant of Vision. YouTube.com/iPriestSatanus. Now back to our program.
Yeah,
awesome.
I fucked it up, I guess.
That's
so confusing, because it's like intro com one, or I don't know. So just anyway.
Yeah,
that was
intro.
My fault. That's not a regular intro, but
that's all right. You know what? That's perfect. That's first. Let's just go ahead and say thanks for tuning in. You're obviously listening to Ooze. It's Saturday, 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. My name's TC Downey, or the Beast, and this is my co-host, Venger Satanus. Venger, how the hell are you doing, man?
Good. I should have just said, "Oh yeah, I did that on purpose," because today's show is about chaos, and that was random.
Definitely.
Sort of
definitely random chaos there.
Yeah, that's the essence of chaos, you know. You expect one thing and something else happens. But no, I'm doing good. Another nice
awesome
day here in South Central Wisconsin. Sun's out. It's not too cold. It's probably almost 50 by now, which is nothing unheard of for Wisconsin this late November.
Yeah, that is pretty crazy. I'm actually kind of cracking up here, man, in a way, because you know, chaos is what the show's about, and you know, they got that whole fucking Black Friday madness that went down yesterday. I gotta tell you about that shit, man.
Okay, tell me about it.
It's not something I typically subscribe to. I mean, that's kind of like a whole cult deal. All these people freaking, you know, fly to these stores to wait hours and hours and hours on end for, you know, an extra $30 to $100 savings on this or that. There's fights that break out. It in itself is just chaos, and it's absolutely fucking nuts. I mean, it's nuts. After Thanksgiving, you should be at home with a full fucking belly, your hands stuffed half down your fucking pants, you know, kicking back, taking a nap in your easy chair. You should not be at Walmart at 1 o'clock in the fucking morning waiting for the 5 a.m. sale to start.
Yeah. I realized that I needed a blender yesterday, and so I just went to Target, which is like 5 minutes from my house. You know, I don't know, a decent time, like noon or something. And, you know, there was hardly anyone there, actually. And, I mean, there was the usual amount of people on the weekend. And so I bought this blender, and, you know, I was expecting, like, it builds up, like, this expectations, you know, the Black Friday. You hear so much about it. So I was expecting, like, you know, as I was coming up to the checkout girl with my blender, I was expecting, like, confetti and some balloons and, like, this clown to jump out of nowhere and be like, "Hey, here's the thing for, like, 30% off your blender." And just, like oh, you automatically get, like, an extra $10 savings just because you're here today. And no, I tell you, I paid, like, the full $55 or whatever the fucking blender cost. And then she said, "Okay, thanks," and then I left, and I'm like, wow, that was, like, nothing. I mean, that wasn't special at all. Like, who gives a crap? Like, I thought today was supposed to be, like, or yesterday was supposed to be, like, this giant, like, oh, my God, you know, anywhere from customer appreciation to, if we don't make people happy today that consume products, then we're fucked for the whole 2010 or something. I don't know.
No, actually, what you're going to get, and as first of all, I'm guessing you went out after 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Somewhere between like noon and 1 p.m. probably. I mean, it was,
right.
it was earlier
right.
in the day, but it wasn't like crack of dawn.
Right. No, their deals go, the doorbuster deals go from like 5 a.m. to like noon at tops. And, I mean, most of these people have been camping out overnight. And it's just insane. I mean, the one thing I expect on Black Friday if I go to a store is to meet a cashier with an attitude.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, all the girls
fast.
Around here are like 17, and so they really haven't developed that attitude yet. And of course,
right.
they're probably already thinking like, "Oh my God, who's that tall, shaven head, sexy guy with a goatee and the earrings that's coming towards me with his purchase? That guy's awesome, sexy, and I gotta put on my smile and my my best attitude face."
Right.
So
I
probably thinking that.
Before we actually get into today's topic, I just want to make a clarification for everybody who's listening to this show, because I've seen this posted a couple of places all over the internet. People seem to be a little confused. They seem to think that the Ooze is like my deal. I'm the one hosting it, and you're like the co-host. But no, it's actually it's a joint venture. Matter of fact, the idea of it itself was yours. So, I mean...
Sort of. Yeah, you came to me and you were like, hey, you know, I used to do this radio show, which was, like, completely different. It was, like, Twisted Beast Radio or something. And you were thinking about doing something else because your old co-host, like, totally fucked you over. And you're taking a break and now you wanted to start it up again. And I'm like, well, I was kind of thinking that I'd like to co-host a radio show as well, and so maybe we could like team up and then like take a different spin on it and like talk about anything from left-hand path topics to art to sex to, you know, just magic and chaos and the old ones, just like Satanism and everything in between. So yeah, kind of developed from there. So yeah, we're pretty much equal partners in this, so hopefully that clears that up.
Yeah, I just, you know, I've seen it, and it kind of irritates me because, I don't know, I guess because I want people to have a firm understanding that this is not, this deal wouldn't exist if it wasn't for you.
Right. Well, yeah, vice versa. I mean, I can't even get the, set up the intro right, apparently, so.
I think you did it on purpose.
I wouldn't have even been here, so. Oh, yeah, I know. It's
yeah,
funny.
You did it on purpose, man.
Right, I did, subconsciously.
Good.
But it's funny how things work out, and I think that kind of might illustrate one aspect of chaos, is because going back to more like the whole story with the Black Friday rather than the intro thing. But so is my birthday. On the November 25th, which is the day before Thanksgiving this year, it always changes. And not my birthday, but the relation to Thanksgiving changes. And
right.
There's cake involved, and like a big lunch, and a big dinner, and then Thanksgiving. So normally I try to really be in a strict discipline regimen of like, you know, what I'm eating and how much I'm exercising and stuff like that. So exercising is going awesome, gangbusters. I'm doing everything I can there. But, you know, I overate a little bit, and I had some things that I normally wouldn't, like cake and, you know, like a lot of mashed potatoes and gravy, things like that. So then I'm thinking in my head, like, oh, yeah, I should rectify that by breaking into my protein powder, which is kind of gross, but, you know, I do it because, I don't know, I want to look good in my clothes, I guess. So, but then I realized, oh, crap, I had two blenders, like, a year ago, and then my ex-girlfriend, when we broke up and she moved out, she took my two blenders. She took both of them. I don't know why she needs two blenders, but there you go. So I realized, oh, I need a blender. So that's why I go to Target yesterday to buy a blender and then, you know, use my protein powder, which, yeah, tasted gross, even though I mixed it with juice and whatever. So yeah, just one thing leads to another, and that's kind of chaos because we see one isolated cause or effect or set of events, and we don't see the big picture. We don't see everything surrounding these events and the other influences which come into play. And so everything seems at random, and it seems like it doesn't make sense, like it's all in disorder and chaos. But really, there is an order to it. It's just that it's impossible for us to see with our limited scope and limited sense of perception.
Absolutely. I'm going to go ahead and try to get us a call online here. I'm going to throw out this number for anybody. It's 347-989-1371. And I know we've got our buddy Puck is going to be calling in just a few minutes.
Oh, good.
So this should turn into a real nice discussion. What's actually interesting to me is I've been trying for a while to kind of explain to people when I'm talking to them what the actual concept behind chaos is. And, you know, it's kind of a difficult thing to, you know, knock out in a couple of sentences or to give, you know, a brief description of,
right.
Even visually. Hang on one second. Let's get Puck here on the line.
Okay. Do you want me to quickly... Well, here's what Wikipedia has on chaos theory. Chaos theory is an area of inquiry in mathematics, physics, and philosophy, which studies the behavior of certain dynamical systems that are highly sensitive to initial conditions. This sensitivity is popularly referred to as the butterfly effect. Small differences in initial conditions, such as those due to rounding errors in numerical computation, yield widely diverging outcomes for chaotic systems, rendering long-term prediction impossible in general. Okay.
All right. So before I actually... welcome Puck here, because he's actually hanging on the line. I want to lay out something that I noticed the other night soaking in the hot tub with my girlfriend.
Okay.
Now, normally the two of us will jump in the hot tub, and, you know, we don't have any clothes on. So,
Scandal.
Yeah, scandal. And anyway, so you really don't get any bubbles when you don't have clothes on inside the a hot tub. It's just kind of moving water. Well, her girlfriend was down from Ohio, and so we had to wear clothes, of course, and bubbles started forming at the surface. And as I'm sitting there and listening to the two of them talk, I'm kind of fading out, and I'm watching these bubbles like form these really sporadic, I want to call them systems, where the bubbles would literally come from different directions, and some of them would merge and collide, and other ones would continue to merge and collide until they were like the size of a softball and then pop. And I realized that right then and there, I was looking at chaos.
Mm-hmm.
There didn't seem to be any real explanation as to why this particular pattern was actually forming. But you could kind of watch it go along and see that, oh, this bubble might attach to that one, but or that one, or that one. It doesn't really make any sense why the different bubbles colliding came together.
Right.
So
I
just thought it was
a bunch of bubbles like collected together. It always reminds me of Yog-Sothoth.
Reminds you of Yog-Sothoth? That's
yeah.
A good...
Because already described in at least one story by Lovecraft, is like this cohesion of like spheres or whatever. So I think a mass of big bubbles and with different sizes and undulating and doing weird things, and growing and popping and sprouting. Yeah, it always reminds me of Yog-Sothoth. All right,
and now let's go ahead and say welcome, Puck.
Can you hear me?
Yes,
we can.
Top of the morning to you too. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, good. How are you doing?
Reasonably well. There are other aspects of chaos theory that don't just have to do with initial conditions. They're actually pretty interesting for magical purposes that I wanted to mention as well after you read off that mathematical thing. As you know, I studied mathematics and philosophy in college. And one of the things that's really interesting is that apparently, you know, like at subatomic quantum levels, you know, there's indeterminacy. Any number of probabilities can happen in a given moment, and then a waveform collapses and a given actuality comes into being. But before that time, there's all these chaotic states, and it's impossible to get a determinate prediction on what will occur. So that's there. But when you get a whole bunch of them happening together, because some probabilities are more likely than others, you sort of get an evolution effect, where it's survival of the fittest, and you eventually get stable structures. So you get determinacy out of indeterminacy. So the way you the other version, where you were talking about initial conditions, butterfly effect, that kind of thing, that's where you have determinate things, like the bubbles that you were talking about. It's completely explainable. You know, it's determinate in the physics sense. Every part of the process of how it occurs is understood. It's just not predictable what will actually happen.
Right.
So we get determinacy turns into indeterminacy. Once we add up a whole lot of determinacy together, we start getting
chaos. You go back to the survival of the fittest thing you were talking about?
Well, okay, so think about it this way. At the lowest levels of reality, all that there is is sort of this quantum waveform of probabilities. It's pretty much only describable by an equation.
Right. So basically
now,
you have a bunch of like potential outcomes.
Right. But each given waveform only has a given number of potential outcomes. It has the ones that are the furthest out and least probable, and then it has the ones that are closest towards the center and the most probable, and the ones that are closest to the average are going to be the most probable. So over a whole bunch of times you roll the dice, essentially, the more probable outcomes end up adding up and becoming more and more stable. So it's sort of, you know, that's the basic theory on how matter got formed from subatomic particles at the formation of the universe. At first, all there was light. And everything else, like all matter, was basically just degradation of light and losing energy slowly but surely. And so you get these subatomic particles that are sort of stable first, and then a few of them are mathematically likely to be more stable, and those forms form, and so forth and so on. More and more complexity builds. So it starts out indeterminate and then becomes determinate, and we start getting stability. And then in the vice versa, things that start out indeterminate become determinate, or start out determinate become indeterminate because of entropy. So like in Jurassic Park, Jeff Goldblum's character talks about as they build these more and more complicated systems, the odds that something's going to go wrong and tear it all down increase. Same kind of concept.
Right. Well, I mean, isn't the whole deal with probability that basically because it's possible, it will happen?
Well, given an infinite number of rolls, sure. Like So you sit there and you play in craps with dice, right? And you sit there and you think, wow, that's really weird. I got six sixes in a row. That's not actually weird. It's not any weirder than getting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 on those rolls or any other lining up of them. Not to probability. Probability doesn't have a memory. People do. So you will eventually get all these things that will be improbable popping up as long as you have an infinite amount of rolls. But you don't always have an infinite amount of rolls, and not all interactions in the universe are possible. Like, you have an infinite number of elements, sure, but they can only interact in finite numbers of ways. And that pretty much limits some probabilities in certain situations and makes certain things more probable than others, at least in our portion of space.
Now, how do we get, like, when you're not rolling, but you're dealing with, you know, actual day-to-day life in reality as we know it? And
well, that's one of those
cases
where we get that mix of indeterminacy and determinacy bordering into each other. And that's where, you know, magic starts coming into play a lot of times, I think.
Right. Yeah, I'm more concerned about how you nudge reality to one of those things that, one of the outlying potential things that isn't really likely at all, but there's a chance, and it's something that's, you know, part of your will or your desire or your intent when you're doing some sort of, you know, magic.
They've done all these studies. There's actually some interesting new stuff that's been coming up in quantum mechanics that actually kind of gives the theory about how this works, why magic works to a certain degree. They found out that wherever they look for the particles after they generate them, that's where the biggest concentration of the particles show up. They don't even have
right.
to do prediction. They just look at a place in the vacuum chamber where they, after they shot a couple electrons at each other at high speed, and lo and behold, there are a whole bunch of, you know, gluons and quarks and shit. And that's, you know, strange, to say the least, from the point of view of these materialistic physicists. But it basically, attention is building up reality,
right.
bit by bit by bit. And
that's
so we've got a whole lot of...
Oh, that's what... I don't know if you've ever seen it, but many weeks ago, the Beast and I were talking about that documentary on quantum physics and things like that. What the
Oh, yeah, the Toe documentary?
Yeah, the
no, this is what the I don't think I've seen that, but this is What the Bleep Do We Know? I don't know.
Oh, that other one, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, it talked about not only observation and attention, but sort of, I don't know, being conscious.
Essentially,
or,
yeah, having an observer.
Yeah.
Somehow, the physicists don't have a way to account for it yet. What I think is that it's quantum effects that actually go on in our brain that are the result of consciousness, or they are actually what causes consciousness. But either way, it's the same result, is that we're connected into this quantum level through our consciousness. They don't really have a theory for it, but apparently the universe knows when it's being watched. Just stuff knows when it's being watched, and we can affect it. And so all the various practices of magic that have existed for millennia, which really all come down to elaborate variations on paying attention really well, being really aware, understanding how things fit together and using it to your advantage, and so forth, those things tend towards being able to control your attention and control your attention and intentionality to such a huge degree that you can sort of oomph things one way or the other. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to be throwing fireballs anytime soon. I mean, it'd be great. I'd love fireballs. But I think that, like, I think advertising is actually magic. Like, full form, we just don't think about it that way. I think a lot of things that we do in our society are already magic because they influence things on these lower levels. And
they influence
so,
people's thoughts and, you know.
Exactly.
If people aren't conscious and they're not, they don't have a certain amount of attention and they're not aware or observing, you know, they're kind of asleep, if you will. Then, yeah, I think advertising or the magician or anyone can sort of hijack a person's awareness or low levels of consciousness or something, and they can use that to their own ends. Or they can influence people, you know, on a wide scale and get them to do things because, you know, people, when they're not very conscious, you know, they're like sheep. They're just, you know.
Well, there's that aspect, but I'm also saying to the degree to which their consciousness is influencing reality on the quantum level as well, because they're not awake, because they're asleep, they don't have as much ability, as much juice to oomph it one way or the other as a trained mage does.
Right.
And
so if you get enough, you get like 100,000 people.
Well,
you know,
yeah, there's
they are
that.
Asleep, then, yeah, that's going to have a whole lot more energy to it than even one person that's like...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think that probably what produces maguses is a combination of their own magical power and being at the right time and place in culture and history. You know, it's like because Crowley was perfectly in the right time. You know, it's like it was just right for what was going on and so forth. And he was able to really catch something at the right moment. And, you know, LeVay and Aquino were both very much at the right time for their stuff as well. And I think that that's primarily what – it has to be a combination of factors. I think that you can't You have to be adding something to the world mind. You can't directly fight the world mind, no matter how powerful you are. That's why I want help from outside.
Guys, before we keep going, we actually have a question coming from our chat room, directed to you, Puck, actually. Pants Hoof would like to know if you know about auroras, other than the fact that it occurs with an interaction from some particles and atoms from the ionosphere.
The aurora borealis? Yeah, actually, one of my physics professors was a researcher on it for her entire doctoral and postdoctoral work. So I know some about it. Is there a specific question other than does he just want to know how aurora borealis works?
I'm gathering that from it. It says streams of green and red light. He said awesome. I guess that's the answer he was looking for.
So, yeah, I know how it works.
All right. Getting back to chaos, guys.
Yes.
Now, let's pretend, I guess, that our listeners have absolutely no clue what's going on. Let's give them an idea of what exactly chaos magic is and how it relates to... I'm actually looking for it, but Puck, if you've got a short answer, that'd be fine.
Oh, chaos magic?
Yeah.
Okay. Chaos magic was a movement started in the late 70s. It was kind of an outgrowth of the Discordian movement, which was created by Robert Anton Wilson and Robert Shea. A guy named Pete Carroll, who was a British physicist, and another individual named Phil Hine, who was a psychologist, also British. Did a collection of different work. Another guy named Ray Sherwin did a bunch of different work. And the idea was that since all the various traditions of magic seem to work, it can't be that a given tradition's specifics, like their words of power or their specifics of practice, is actually what's causing magic to work. So instead, Pete Carroll theorized that it was this quantum effect that at that time had no evidence for it, which is he predicted that we would get the evidence that we now have for consciousness having macro-level effects, like, you know, a big particle burst being just because I looked over there instead of over here. Basically predicted that was what was causing magic to work, that it was about belief and manipulating your belief, manipulating your consciousness. So they pulled on the work of Austin Osmond Spare, who at one time had been a student of Aleister Crowley's, but it ended up breaking away from the main group. He was an artist, and he had developed a system of sexual magic using sigils, where he would take his statement of intent, break it down, get rid of all the extra letters, and make a symbol or a shape out of it by overlapping the letters. And then he would essentially build up into what he called gnosis. That's where we get that term is from him. And a thing called a death posture, which was sort of making himself hyperventilate while staring at the sigil and masturbating. He would also include pain and blood work from time to time, depending on what the kind of sigil he was working on. He also worked with various entities and created the idea of sort of a new version of theurgy, where we would... He studied a Tibetan concept called tulpa, which is what we now call in modern magic a servitor. A servitor is sort of a created spirit, usually by one person, that has limited intelligence and limited abilities and is meant for usually one or two purposes. And he developed those original concepts. So Pete Carroll brings those in, experiments with belief. Various aspects of his system were doing things like rolling a die and, or on different days of the week also, being a different belief system. So monotheist on Mondays, polytheist on Tuesdays, atheist on Wednesdays, that kind of thing. Playing with your own belief, trying to free up belief. Also working with intentionality, specifically trying to use things like confirmation bias to control your reality. So I'm going to find a quarter, so I'm looking for quarters. And lo and behold, I find like 10 quarters that day. Well, yes, I was looking, but I was also expecting to find them. So various different experiments on his part were more based around that kind of work. He talked about a new theory of aeonics, which is different from what most occultists are using, where in which he talked about monotheism, polytheism, atheism, and so forth being specific aeons, and that by breaking out of all of them, we'll attain to sort of an occult version of the technological singularity where we'll be able to just believe nothing and everything as an act of will. Okay, he calls that the pandomanium, domaineon. And his stuff is mostly based on physics, so you'll get a lot of math. His writing was really dense. I was actually an email pen pal with him back in 99 and 2000, and I would write him these huge five-page emails with all these questions, and he would write me like two paragraphs, and it would take me like a week to respond because it was so dense. He's a very brilliant man. Phil Hine was a psychologist, so he approached it from sort of a group therapy, working with psychological parts of yourself, and he was also a computer programmer. So he developed a new way to build servitors where you base it on a flow chart, like a computer program, if-then statements, if this happens, then do that, that kind of thing. And he also developed self-sufficient servitors, which we now call spell engines or vampiric servitors, that they can get energy from other sources so that they can keep on going forever without your intervention. So the practices of chaos magic are a disassociation from the spiritual and theological and philosophical ideas that used to be involved in magic and getting down to very practical experiments. How's that?
Yeah, I think that's quite a mouthful.
It's mostly defunct now. Like, everybody's just absorbed chaos magic. There are very few people still calling themselves chaos. It pretty much died out in the late 90s. I was involved in a few different organizations back then, Z-Cluster and Autonomatrix.
I think that's hard to do, to maintain a sense of, like, you know, I don't have a belief system, or I embrace all belief systems at different times, and, you know, I think that's, it's just, some people come to that easily, but some people, I think the majority of even magicians don't like that, or they don't find that as aesthetically pleasing, or it's just too difficult to maintain the sort of everything and nothing at the same time. So that's probably why the whole chaos movement has kind of morphed into, I think a lot of people bring chaos and chaos theory and chaos magic into their own respective, you know, paradigm or paradigms or belief systems. But true chaos magicians that really are wholeheartedly like, you know, nothing is real and everything is permitted and it's just like anything goes, but I'm keeping an open mind at all times. I think that's pretty rare, but yeah, especially nowadays. I think not too many people are into that, or especially groups.
Well, the IoT is still around. That was Pete Carroll's group, the Illuminates of Thanateros. They're still around, but Pete Carroll's not actually in it anymore.
Okay.
That's interesting that you bring that up, because me and my wife were discussing last night that we have a problem, or I have a problem, she doesn't so much. I have a problem working with specific deities, even as God forms at this point. Whenever I was coming up, I had no problem at all, because I was very thelemic. I was doing like basically an AA system. I did AA grade work for years. And, you know, I had no problem. You know, Hewitt had it, Roger Hewitt, you know, the whole nine yards. I could embrace whole pantheons and be just fine with it. But now, after years of doing the chaos magic thing and playing with that, now I can only use sort of general concepts without feeling like, I don't know, stupid. It's just to give lip service or to name any specific deity other than as just sort of a listing of calling out names of like the infernal names in the Satanic Bible. Like, I can do those kinds of rituals. But whenever I actually do invocations in my ritual work nowadays, I just call out to like the outer darkness. It's like the only thing I can talk about. And I just read the Baphomet Codex by Jason Sorrell. And his concept of Baphomet is at least somewhat like that, you know, this all and nothing at the same time, and this beyond everything, and it's everything is true, nothing is permitted. It's very much a chaos magic god. in one sense, but at the same time, it's still just another name and another face, and I still just end up feeling uncomfortable with it. At this time, I've got like a blank altar. I've got no deity images, no nothing, just black and candles. So I think I messed up my head in a little way. The chaos magic to a certain degree, because I got way into that nothing is real thing. I still am to a certain degree. But now I can't reach out to the real, because, you know, the sun's real. That means all the gods associated with the sun's real. The sun's right there. I can point at it. So I should be able to be cool with that.
I think, and forgive me if I'm wrong, but I think that the most interesting factor and probably the most powerful piece in the whole deal with chaos magic is that the paradigm shift itself is kind of a transitional state rather than, I'm trying to think of how to explain this, rather than it being your... old-fashioned, set-in-stone values, the transitional state itself is what encompasses the power, the ability to shift between workings. That focus, you know, that you have to, you know, bring your mind to accept this particular paradigm, you know, at that moment. I don't know, I think that's where the magic happens there.
Well, that's definitely the strength of the chaos tradition, but they're like a toolbox with no blueprints. You know, they have no concept of the great work. Pete Carroll himself says that if somebody mentions the word mysticism to him, he's going to point a loaded wand at them. You know, I mean, he just doesn't want to hear about it. You know, there's a lot of power in being able to do that. But at the end, like in Z Cluster, back in like 2001, we would get up these organized IRC rituals from all over the internet, and we would be like casting circles and doing Kabbalah with, like, you know, Jean-Luc Picard and the people from Star Trek and shit. It just gets ridiculous after a certain point.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of ridiculousness that seems to go.
It's one thing to work with Lovecraft mythos and Sandman and stuff that's already epic, like, or Cenobites from Hellraiser. You know, those are concepts I can see working with magically, but Star Trek?
Right. Yeah, that's something I think I mentioned in Cthulhu Cult, the book one of our cult's Bible. That's, you know,
available from Lulu.com.
What's that?
Available from Lulu.com.
Oh, yeah, and for me personally, if anyone wants to mail me or get a free PDF. But, yeah, if anyone wants to, or if anyone switches paradigms, like, you know, left and right and starts using, like, Star Trek and then Strawberry Shortcake and things like that, eventually, I think, the part of you that fully believes that it's real is going to break down after a while, and or you're just going to lose some sort of momentum or energy because you're constantly going back and forth from Jean-Luc Picard to Strawberry Shortcake to Pinhead to, you know.
I very much agree. I really think that's true.
Yeah, from Harry Potter or something. And it's, I mean... I don't know if the human mind can work like that. How can you go back and forth through all these things and then rationalize that they're all real and they're all integrated and working together and build a fully realized belief system and a paradigm from that can sort of be a structure around your magic and your magical self and you know, your intent and your will and everything you're trying to do with your sorcery. You know, after a while, I think it's just going to, the chaos is going to devolve into just sort of entropy where everything breaks down and there is no structure and you're not getting any more energy either. You're not getting any more force or ability to do. You're just, you know, it's all just a big jumble. And it's all,
it is. I agree. Yeah, I remember reading that portion, and I agreed with it whenever I read it. That's true. I agree with you. I think that there's, I think it's like belief fatigue, you know?
Yeah,
it's like,
that's a good way to put it, belief fatigue. Exactly, yeah.
And I think to a certain degree, it's not, you know, I can do certain things, like it's not so bad. Like I have a paradigm that's pretty feasible that allows me to work with a lot of this stuff, but I've gotten to the point where working with even the entities that were my patrons when I was younger, I putting a name or a face to these things feels silly or ridiculous, and so I've ended up taking it out of most of my practice, except for like calling out a series of names for an invocation where I'm trying to get at a concept with a whole bunch of symbols. But it's one of the things I'm going to be working on in my own magical practice. So
now,
at the same time, I think a healthy respect for chaos and chaos theory and
well, I still think the math is the underlying reason why magic works. I mean, I think that the math and the quantum results are why we get the combination of malleable reality and yet still stable enough to live in reality.
Right.
But I don't think that the experiment that was chaos magic led to many good results, other than the realization that it was true, that you could use a coffee cup for the just like a chalice with all the runes and stuff carved on it would work just as well if you could manage to believe it. So that was a good little insight, but you know, I just think that there were a lot of negative effects from it.
Right.
Now, forgive me. I'm, of course, the less learned here of all of us. It occurs to me that the entropy effect of it is maybe more welcome than you guys are noting. I would think the breakdown of everything that's systematically real and your mind would lead to a very, very pliable, workable energy. You know, if you can get yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree with that. That's a huge advantage. That a level of flexibility is a huge advantage. But there's, you know, that expression is have an open mind, but don't have it so open your brain falls out. You know, it's. I think that Venger's right. I think that yes, making it as dexterous and agile and pliable as possible, yes, that's a huge advantage. But if you have no structure at all, then you're not going to accomplish anything. And I think the notion of the true will, I think the notion of, I don't exactly, like I've listened to the old podcasts and Venger talks about pulling, you know, getting rid of the mask and getting down to something that's core. I think of it more like there's a formula that is the relation of all of our masks, and that is what the core is. It describes how we interact with all these different forces in our world, and it is unique, and that's our true will. And if we can get in touch with that, then that gives us some direction, at least. And I think that were we more pliable in our minds without losing any form and any function, we could, you know, be exactly as pliable as you're describing, but I think that we're still limited to a certain degree. I know that I can't do certain levels of practical magic nearly as easily as I did before. I have to use pretty much greater black magic in the Setian terms all the time. I can't use white magic at all anymore because white magic requires talking to some entity or working with some force outside myself, and I start feeling stupid.
That core selves kind of reminds me of the magnetic center. I know we talk about the fourth way and things like that
mm-hmm.
time to time on the show, and if you can, you know, get some of your core selves, some of your masks or your eyes that are interested in the same sort of things, that are interested in work and interested in making some sort of progress, some self-improvement, you can get, you know, a bunch of those collected and working together, then that might be close to what you're talking about with your core selves. Also, with what Beast was saying, Yeah, I think if you tear down enough where you have a blank canvas, that's great. And then, as any artist knows, you know, once you have a blank canvas, it's kind of your job to fill it in some capacity, because, you know, you don't want to just have nothing, you know, just a blank canvas, and that's it, and then hang that on your wall. I mean, I guess you could, but it doesn't make much sense to most people, I think. I think you need something. You need to build it up once you've torn it down. And I think once all the structures are gone, the old structures, it's time to, you know, put on your architect hat and build something new in place of it.
Well, I think that's a lot about what the great work is supposed to be about, you know, is that that's the whole concept of the death portion of the initiation process. You
right.
break down all the stuff that came before, and you build up something in line with the will. One of the things that you said, actually, and I believe it was Cthulhu Cult, was that when we're asleep, you know, it's like we're a machine and all of our parts are going in all these different directions and we're not getting any work done. That was exactly how I always conceived great work, was that the problem is that we output all this energy and it's going towards doing nothing. And we've got to get all our outputs going in the directions where we want them to go so that we can get them to do work. Because I still think, you know, the definition from physics, the ability to do work, is the definition of energy. So when the white lighters start talking about, oh, you know, I can feel the energy, it's like, what, you can feel it do what? What's it doing?
Right.
We got another question that had been posed on the forum, and I'm going to throw this out to you guys. Can anybody explain what necromancy and chaos magic have in common?
You can pretty much do any kind of operation in magic using chaos magical techniques. Chaos magic is a toolbox. It's not a type of magic per se. So you can use chaos magic to do necromancy, but I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah, that sounds like, unfortunately, a typical forum question where people are just like, you know, asking things like, how does Yog-Sothoth relate to maple trees? You know, it just like, comes out of nowhere, and it really doesn't serve, not to rip on the person asking a question, because the questions are awesome. I think that's one of the great things about the Cult of Cthulhu forum, is that people can ask anything, and no one's going to, you know, tear you a new asshole. But at the same time, you know, I wish, you know, things were a little bit more progressive on there, and I don't know, people were a little bit more, people put a little more thought and energy, I guess, into their posts in the forum, and I don't know. Yeah, it just seems like a strange question, but okay, whatever. Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with Puck's answer, so I don't have anything more to add.
Well, I just think that for anything that's dangerous, you should probably use some sort of paradigm that's established. I wouldn't want to call on Jean-Luc Picard to protect me from an evocation of any kind, and necromancy is a form of evocation.
Yeah. Maybe people haven't gone back to the basics, or they haven't revisited them. You know, I would, as long as we're talking about chaos in this show, I would definitely recommend, like you mentioned, Phil Hine. His books like Prime Chaos and Condensed Chaos, which I think was retitled Oven Ready Chaos, which I think is stupid, but that's what I've heard. But you can probably still get Condensed Chaos somewhere.
Maybe. Yeah, there's also the Pseudonomicon.
Okay.
And,
That is cool. That also deals with the mythos in a chaos magic context. Yeah, I own
and there's
Pseudonomicon. It's good.
And there's a few papers, like shorter things that he released through his website a few years ago, like Work of Chaos Magic within the Cthulhu Mythos, I believe,
right.
And a few other things like that. And so
but I will
it's worth looking into. His stuff's more understandable than Pete Carroll's is.
Right, and I would recommend the Satanic Bible by Anton LaVey. I know it's not...
Mm-hmm.
generally chaos approved, but I find there's a lot of left-hand path chaos magic in the Satanic Bible. I mean, it's a lot of the magic is all about aesthetics and just how the individual magician feels with preferences and basically making it your own and doing whatever works and making things aesthetically pleasing, and you know, just trying to get into that mental belief space where anything is possible. The Book of Lies, put out by Disinformation about the occult and magic and things like that, I think that's a useful resource. And then, of course, my books, Cthulhu Cult and Libra AO, I think that's good stuff, too. You know, that's kind of written for the beginner, kind of an intro to what we're doing. So I would, you know, read all that stuff first before getting too heavy into, you know, experimentation or asking too many noob questions about, like, you know, if I'm practicing ceremonial magic and I turn towards Venus instead of Jupiter, is that okay? You know, like, come on, really?
It sounds like a bunch of Christians. So do I need to kneel? Is it okay if I sit when I pray? Do I need to use a special prayer?
Or the satanic equivalent. Like, if I genuflect in reverse, like, is that more satanic than just giving the finger to Jesus? It's like, wow. Can you go back to YouTube and, like, leave this alone for a while?
All right, so we did actually have another question posed here on the forum, and I believe that it's a valid question.
Ninja, why are you such an asshole?
You're the leader. You get to be an elitist asshole. That's part. It's rank half its privileges. Just remember that. R-H-I-P, rank half its privileges.
90% of the time, I'm totally a nice guy and very open-minded and considerate and all that. But every once in a while, like 10% of the time, I'm kind of a dick, I guess. But, yeah, I guess that's my right. Anyway, let's get to the question.
All right, the question is, what is the primary difference between black and chaos magic?
That's a little more of an interesting question. I'll let you guys feel this.
I know Puck's itching to throw it out, so I'll give it to him first.
I'm trying not to dominate things. Black magic is generally defined as magic that does not call on an outside power to gain its juice, to get its stuff done. So it's your own will, it's your own power. You do it through an act of will. You don't generally call upon a god or an external force at all. That's generally the definition that's given by, like, the Church of Satan and the Temple of Set. The Temple of Set breaks down magic into greater and lesser as well, but that wasn't the question. Chaos magic is a technique. Black magic is what you do inside that technique. Chaos magic can call on an outer force. It can be white magic, or it can use your own force of will, and it can be black magic. That's the whole kind of idea of chaos magic.
See, I would argue, though, with the black magic, I mean, everybody has their own definition, but I definitely think the black magic, or even the left-hand path sort of magic, does, to a certain extent, call on, you know, outside external forces or energies.
I think that we do it differently.
Okay.
Let me explain my point here, is that when we interact with an outside entity, it's more like Crowley talking to Iowas or Aquino talking to Set. It's a direct interaction with an intelligence that we engage with as if it was another entity. We have boundaries with it. Sometimes we make pacts. Sometimes we make agreements with a patron, these kinds of things. But we don't interact with them as if they were a god we were praying to so much.
Okay.
We're not, you know, you're just all that and the bag of chips and I love you and so forth and so on. And if we do or are doing that, that can be a part of a practice. You know, chaos magic embraces any practice, and I embrace any practice. I mean, whatever gets what you need done. And bhakti yoga, devotion yoga, on a particular entity that you wish to take on the properties of that entity is a great way of doing that magically.
The left-hand path, I'd say, it's not.
Well, I don't think you should be limited to white or black magic. Let the good guys think that they don't get to use certain techniques. But I think that any time that it suits your purposes to work with the forces of nature, with the flow of things, to call upon a force that's right there in the situation, do what you need it to do, rather than exert your own force of will, do it, man. Save yourself some effort.
Right. Yeah, I think with the black magic, it's primarily serving yourself. And, you know, everything...
That's one definition, yeah. It's selfish magic.
Your will or your attempt or your magic is going for is somehow benefiting you. Even if it's like what LaVey broke it down into is, you know, lust, destruction, and compassion magic. If you're doing something to help, like a friend or a loved one or something like that, it's still in some way benefiting you. And I guess that would be my definition of black magic.
Well, at this point I'm trying to be sort of politic to our cousins in the white hats, but I don't actually believe the right-hand path really exists, because the real right-hand path are the Christians, are the monotheists, are the people who would never, ever, ever do magic, because their belief is that God knows best.
Right.
And that they would never exert their will to change reality. There are people all over the place that follow those paths where everything in their life they relate to the Bible, or they relate to the Quran, or they relate to their prayers, or whatever. And whether it's really their own desires underneath it all or whatever, how they think of it would not allow for magic.
Right.
And on that note, guys, we are just about out of time. I got about 3 minutes left. I'm sorry, I'm trying to actually get this so we can play the full outro at least today. Real quick, I want to thank you for calling in again, Puck. We're going to have to start calling you the Dr. Drew of magic.
I hope not.
So thanks for coming, coming out.
Puck is very knowledgeable, and he's a kick-ass third host of the show when he's on. So that's awesome.
Thanks for everybody who is listening today. We had more live listeners this week than ever, so that's awesome. Thank you guys. If you really want to help us out, favorite our show, favorite our channel, rate all of the episodes that you've listened to. Friend request us. Let's build some momentum here. Benger, of course, thank you, man, for coming out and putting on this wonderful show.
Yeah, my pleasure as always.
And with that, I think I've said all my thank yous for the day.
Yeah. Oh, I'd just like to mention our film project that we're looking forward to getting started in April, but now we're sort of tossing ideas around and in pre-production, and that is Touched by the Tentacle. I've got a new YouTube video talking about it, and I've got a new MySpace profile that I created just for the film. It's basically go to myspace.com/touchedbythetentacle and add that to your MySpace friends, and go to the new website, www.cthulhu-cult.com. Check that out. I'm going to be posting some new blogs and stuff in the near future. And plus, there's a cool gallery of some naked girls with green slime. That's cool. And
awesome.
I always do it every time I see it.
All right. Well, in that case, we'll catch all the rest of you guys next week.
All righty.
Thank you for listening to The Use. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily reflect those held by Venture or Beast or any institution associated with us. The Use does not condone any illegal or unethical acts. If you have been offended during the production of the show, we're sorry, but as the old expression goes, tough luck. Thank you, and see you next week.